Hi, this is Serena Catania with OWC Radio, and guess where I am? I'm at NAB 2019 with Ryan Connolly. He's a filmmaker that I've been following for a while now. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, you are all over NAB. You've got some seminars that you're doing here. Let's go ahead and...
I'm doing a few talks all tomorrow, back-to-back pretty much. So I'm at the Frame.io booth at 10:45 a.m. Okay. And then after that, I'm at the Filmic booth at, I think it's 1:30 p.m. And then after that, the Aperture booth at 5 p.m.
So for those of you who don't know, right, Ryan, how long have you been doing Film Riot?
Film Riot will be 10 years next month.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is crazy. I've had, like, recently some people come up to me who are working professionally and say, like, oh, yeah, I watched you through high school. And I'm like, that's not possible. You're an adult. It's kind of crazy how long it's been going on. That's like, you know, 16, 17-year-olds are now 26, 27 in the industry. It's kind of amazing.
It's funny when you can date how old you are by how old your audience is.
I know.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, it's not great.
Take me back. I want to know, Ryan Connolly, little kid, when did you realize you were creative?
I throw the age 8 out. My mom says it was like 6, but I just say 8 because I don't know if that's like a mom embellishment, you know? But I remember my dad brought home our first video camera, this big bulky VHS camera, and I remember vividly, like, at that time, I used to do, like, you know, plays for my family like a lot of us do, and they never quite got what I was trying to do, or they wouldn't laugh at a joke where I'm like, how do you not see what I'm seeing? And then the looking through that viewfinder, it kind of clicked that I can make them see what I want them to see. And ever since that, I've just been obsessed with that idea of putting that experience forth of how I see the world or how I see a moment or an interaction. And I've kind of just been chasing that ever since.
So did you go to film school? Or?
Yeah. I went to film school pretty late. I was like 21. And I went to a film school called Full Sail University, which was this one-year Full Sail film school. And I went to that one because it was a tech school. So it was all very focused on where the buttons are, not like film theory and whatnot. And it was a super intense in and out, which is what I really wanted to do. I wanted to learn enough to then go learn. Because, you know, back then, the information just wasn't out there. It was film school or you somehow network and get on sets. And I knew no one. I was like some kid from South Florida that I didn't know anyone. And doing any kind of production. So that was like really the only thing that seemed like, you know, a viable path for me. So I went to film school, and then after film school, just knew enough to put myself through a whole new film school, which was the one of figuring out how to tell a story, how to give an experience to an audience, which is a whole other thing unto itself, you know.
Sorry, I wanted to hear you, and they were talking. Well, we're at NAB, okay? I just want to tell the audience listening in that we are at NAB, and things are very noisy here. So it's almost impossible to not get some of the outside noise.
It really is so much commotion.
I know, but isn't that what makes it exciting to
you? It is, yeah.
Like 100,000 of our best friends here, all at 1 week.
100,000 of your best friends that you don't know.
If you can't have a good time at NAB, then there's something really wrong with you, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, every year, I don't know about you, but I always say, oh my gosh, I can't do it again. And then I think about, well, I won't see this person, and I won't see that person, I won't see this person, and then I always end up doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a film. You get to the end of it, and you're so exhausted that you're like, why do I do this? I don't want to do it again. But enough time passes that you're like, I really want to get back to that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I'm very much a fan of your work. I think
you're
incredibly talented. I want to see you doing feature-length films sometime in the very near future.
That's the goal.
I'm saying that to all you agents out there. If you don't grab this guy up, you are absolutely crazy.
I like you. We're friends.
No, I mean it. I mean, I watch your films that you make, and they're very professional.
Thank you.
But you're a host, you're a writer, you're a director, you're a producer, and you've worked with $100 budgets with like a crew of maybe 3 or 4.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And you've worked with, on Ballistic, you had 100 people on your crew. So can you talk a little bit about the kind of films that you make and maybe the difference between the little ones and the big ones?
Yeah, I mean, I've done everything from, you know, $0 to 3-figure to 6-figure productions. And it's been a very interesting journey. And the one thing that it's most interesting is the back-to-back last 2 films I did. One was Sentinel, one was Ballistic. And Sentinel was one of the lowest resource, cheapest films I've ever made, and then right into Ballistic, which was one of the biggest resource, highest budget films I've ever made, well, by far the biggest. And Sentinel was just something where it was, I like to challenge myself, and you know, now's the time to do it. You're not, you're not making a feature film. There's not millions of dollars on the line, and so if you can get a couple of passionate friends together and go out to a field in the middle of nowhere, you know, why not make it extremely hard for yourself and just test yourself? So Sentinel was one where I didn't even really write a script. I wrote like bullet points, and I kind of wanted to test if I knew generally what I wanted to accomplish. If I went in there with zero prep whatsoever, no shot lists, no, you know, just go look at the location and then construct it from there with a CG element that's not even there that my actor needs to interact with, and then keeping all the logic in mind of that, and even in the location, just to get my actor to run from one place to the other in the film, it looks like from point A to point B.
Yeah,
but in reality, it's like all over the place.
So that was a lesson in editing too, actually.
Right, exactly.
Watching that. Yeah.
And you know, keeping all that screen direction in mind, but also figuring out a way to make it coherent within the backgrounds that he's. So finding clever ways of, okay, he goes this, that tall grass looks like that tall grass. So if we, you know, and making it all work. So that was kind of the idea behind that one, is to make something fun and experience that people would like, but also test myself in a very like intense, rigorous way that, you know, that stuff happens on set. Everything falls apart, and now you have 5 minutes to come up with a new plan. And that's exactly what happened in Ballistic, which is funny. You know, we had 100 people on set. We shot in LA for all the daytime action stuff. We have practical explosions going on, a full body burn for a stuntman, wire pulls like crazy, and things go wrong. They always go wrong, no matter what. On the biggest budget films, they go wrong. So, you know, we were losing our day, and I had to throw out the plan and create a whole new plan. And just by doing stuff like Sentinel, where it was, you know, it was, I think it was $200 because we got food for everybody, and, you know, we bought a wardrobe. So it cost us like $200 total. That's something that you can experiment with. And if it falls apart, you know, all right, you're out $200. But, you know, you start shoring up those things in yourself and giving yourself the experience. So when you go to something like Ballistic, where there is a lot of money on the line, sponsors on the line, 100 people who are, you know, trusting you that they're not wasting their time, that you have those experiences, and, you know, you're making educated decisions based off of, you know, the last time this happened to me, I did this, this will work, let's do that, let's move. And you can move really, really quick because you've done it before.
It's amazing. Oh, we've got people watching us. Hello. I know, where'd Annie be? Sorry, I got distracted for a minute. People are waving over there. I'm not used to that. It's got to be you.
It's so, you. It's definitely
so
you.
So I guess one caveat on Sentinel, though, I do want to tell our young filmmakers out there, don't try this at home, because you have years of experience as a filmmaker.
Right.
So you can go on a set and you can sort of wing it, right?
Yeah,
because even though you haven't written everything down, you were working with an outline.
Right.
You know the story that you want.
That is absolutely a caveat.
And that's important, because not everybody can do that.
Exactly. And that's what we said in the behind the scenes of Sentinel, is I did it that way because I've done 16 or 17 short films now after film school, not even counting, you know, the ones I did before. And those are ones that, you know, I, even if it was $10, I was so stressed, because you're asking your friends to give up a weekend.
Yeah.
That's a big ask, you know?
Yeah.
You know, time is the most valuable commodity, and you're asking people to give it to you. And so, you know, all those that I did, even one called Proximity, which that one, I love that one because that one came about because what would have been our biggest budget, biggest short film ever fell apart last minute. And instead of crying about it, we decided to take the $300 we had left over and some of the gear that we had and five friends and just make a new film. So in 10 days, we completely wrote and shot a new film. But in those 10 days, that's all I did. I prepped as much as I possibly could, shot listed like crazy, and just had everything. So I had done that for 13, 14, 15 films, however many films it was, after film school again, not even counting before that. So I had a lot of experience in building those scenes out, so I was able to wing it because I did take the time to plan the others, so I knew generally what I needed and how I work and how to put an action scene together. So yeah, that's a great point. If you're just starting this out, one of my good friends who is, you know, making features right now, he was on my podcast, and he was talking about You know, it's not just practice that makes perfect. It's perfect practice that makes perfect. Putting everything in you into every single project is the best form of practice. That's when you're getting the best out of it. And you're learning the best from it. Is you're not doing like, nah, it's just $200. Let's just wing it. Like, even though I was winging, I was doing it for an educational purpose for myself, to prove to myself that I could do that. When things fall apart, I can do that. But I got to that point to where it was like, okay, I just want to make sure I can do that. And even in that, even though we were, I was stressed about it, that I was choosing to do this, because I'm still asking these people to come and do this, and they're passionate, and these are filmmakers. And then on there, you know, although I'm winging it, making up as we go, I'm just as passionate and just as 110% about what we're making right now as I always am. So, yeah, that perfect practice makes perfect, I think, is the, like, encapsulates that.
That is best. Another lesson for young filmmakers, because what you're exhibiting there is the fact that you care no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you do your very, very best, somehow you'll get it back, right?
Yeah.
If you're volunteering on a set to work as an intern or a PA, or
exactly,
if you've actually been hired and maybe you don't agree with what they're doing, if you play your position and you play it as well as you can, you're going to get work.
Yeah.
Because we travel in packs, right? That's
right.
What we do.
Exactly.
And at the last minute, you can't just hire somebody you don't know when you don't really have a chance to do it twice.
Yeah, and everybody wants to work with good, passionate people.
Absolutely.
And you show that, and, you know, I've noticed many times where they're going for that guy over the more talented guy because he was a pain to work with. They're going for the guy who's talented, maybe not as talented, but he's great to work with, he's super passionate, and he's putting in the time and going above and beyond. And that is more valuable than anything else, I
think. So for you, you do so many different things. I mean, I love your videos about trick effects.
Yeah.
Those are really cool.
I love
blowing things up and smashing things.
Me too.
I don't know. What is it about that?
I don't know.
You know,
it's like you're not supposed to, so it's kind of fun.
Oh, it's so much fun. I have Chris Vandershaft coming on this afternoon, and he specializes in the Phantom 1,000 frames per second.
Oh, yeah.
Smashing things up.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, I can hardly wait. But how I guess you just have this amazing mind that thinks outside the box, right? Don't you think that when you don't have a lot of resources, you have to think
outside the box? You have to think outside the box. And it's really fun. And I think in every project I do, I've said on my show a lot, I try to keep myself uncomfortable. Like when I started my production company, I had to quit my full-time job and at some point and just, you know, jump out of the plane and hope the parachute worked, because it was like, you know, starting to feel like it was going backwards. And my parents would have taken me in and let me stay there, but I didn't want to do that because that would have been comfortable and I wouldn't have had to worry about rent, because, you know, my parents are, I'm very lucky, I have very supportive parents. I would have been like, it's fine, stay as long as you want, you know, and I would have had great food and it would have been great. But I just didn't tell them that, you know, I'm doing this and I'm not going to have money for an apartment. I was going to live out of my car to stay uncomfortable. Luckily, a friend let me sleep on his futon in his apartment. And that was just, although we were very close, it's uncomfortable. You feel like you're imposing on their space, and yet, you know, so it makes you work so much harder. And that sort of thinking I bring to every film. Anything that I'm going to, which is a good point about Sentinel, that was a big reason for it, because it kind of felt like, all right, if we're going to do this, I know exactly how to make that. And it's not as stressful. I want to be uncomfortable. Okay, so what if I tell myself I'm not allowed to prep it? Now I'm uncomfortable. You know what I mean? And it just takes the value of what you do up to your, you know what I mean? It's, you know, going into that job interview you're terrified for versus the one you're like, I'm going to get it. You know what I mean?
And then you don't get it.
Right. There's so much more prep to it. There's so much more passion to it that you're thinking about it nonstop.
Yeah.
So I try to do that with every project, is just to be as uncomfortable as possible, because it just makes me push that much harder. And I think with low resources and, you know, those effects that we do and the, you know, the tricks we come up with, I think that's kind of what it is. You want to accomplish something, but you don't have it. So you're in this uncomfortable position of, well, I don't want this to look bad. So you start thinking in ways you wouldn't normally think to come up with, you know, a lot of these things. And I think that's the key, is just to, you want to accomplish a certain level of thing or a certain goal, or have the audience, you know, perceive something in the moment. And, you know, how can I do that with the resources that I have? And sometimes it's not doing a trick. Sometimes it's not showing it at all. Sometimes it's you cut away and you just use sound. And that's all you need. And it's 1,000 times more effective than trying to pull it off because, okay, zero resources, can't blow up this car. But if we just cut away to the actor's reaction to it and put some light on their face and add a great sound effect, now the car blew up.
And that gets the audience's imagination working,
right,
too. And sometimes that's even better.
Yeah, sometimes that's just what you want for the scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
I remember we were, during the early days of Sundance, we were premiering Electric Horseman at Sundance. And Sidney Pollack told me, and I've never forgotten it, that what you don't show is sometimes more poignant and more impactful than what you do. So I do remember that very
vividly. Well, that's the coolest story ever.
Yeah.
I don't know how I followed that one up.
No, I think it, I've never forgotten that. You know how sometimes you meet people in your life and they give you advice and you really remember it. That was one of those moments.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, Jaws with the shark. It's that, you know, that same old adage that everybody always talks about. It's the Bruce the Shark situation. If the shark would have worked, it wouldn't have been as scary. And it wouldn't have held up to today, because when you do see the shark now, you know, it's dated, but because you see it so rarely, the movie really, really holds up even now as such a great thriller.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, and especially in horror, because I like to play in that realm a little bit, horror and thriller, and I think not showing and holding that back as long as possible is what really, like, captures what you're trying to in that sort of genre as well. So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
So with all these things you do, what's your favorite? I mean, if you had to pick one of your children, so to speak, it's hard, isn't it?
What's my favorite short film?
Posting, writing, directing, producing?
Definitely writing and directing.
Right.
If I could choose one thing, if I could only choose one thing for the rest of my life, it would definitely be directing.
Yeah.
But writing and directing are my two main things.
Right.
I used to edit all my films, and then in Ballistic, I worked with Lucas Harger, and I'd never want to edit anything ever again. It's just working with, collaborating in those ways, bringing a perspective in that has a style and viewpoint similar to yours. We really clicked. You know, they're all marriages in film.
Yes.
With the DP, it's a marriage. With the editor, it's a marriage. With the producers, it's a marriage. All of it. So it really has to be people you mesh with. And we just clicked so perfectly. And, you know, it was almost like editing at the speed of thought, too, because, you know, when you're editing it yourself, you're like, okay, here's what I want this moment. Here's how I think this moment will work. And then you just got to sit there doing the technical aspect of clicking and making the thing work. And then you watch it back, and then, okay, that worked. And now you're thinking about the next thing. As a director with an editor, hey, what if we did this? And he's doing it, and I'm thinking about the next thing. And I'm also able to back up and look at the thing as a whole, this bird's eye view of the project. That when you're doing it yourself, you're kind of in the granular aspects of it that you're not quite, it's a little more difficult. And it's easier to see it with fresh eyes quicker than when you're the one editing it. You're too close to it. So detaching yourself from it, I've found is extremely useful. And then writing, you know, I'm writing a few things right now, but I have writers I'm working with.
Yeah.
So I really love collaborating in those ways, because ideas that you never would have had, because you throw out an idea that you really love and they go, that's cool, but what if also, and then it's just like, well, that's 10 times better now.
Yeah.
And so just those collaborations are great. And it's just the one thing that I don't think I could co anything with is directing.
Yeah.
That to me feels like it needs to be a singular, you know, vision.
Do you have a dream project? I know you can't talk about the details of it, but do you have a dream project, like a film that you want to make? Or
yeah, I have several right now that I'm developing that would all be amazing to make, that, you know, one day I'm going to make, you know.
Oh, you will.
For sure.
I guess what I also want to ask you is, what's on your bucket list that you haven't done yet?
You know, a feature. Really?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what I've been, you know, from when I saw Jurassic Park at 11 years old, and it's a story I've told a million times on my own show, but I saw Jurassic Park when I was 11, and I'd never, because my parents were very strict on what they allowed us to watch, and I think if they would have known what type of movie it was, they wouldn't let me see it, but I loved dinosaurs. I was a freak for dinosaurs, so they let my brother take me to it, and I had never seen anything like that. To feel so unsafe in an entirely safe place, and worry about characters that I knew were just actors, and I didn't want them to get hurt. I'd never experienced that. And ever since that, I've just been chasing that, just, you know, being able to give that experience to a room full of people in this dark room that all come together to experience emotionally this collective thing together, to laugh, grip your seat, scream, whatever it is. There's just something so magical about that. That above all else, that's like, I have to do that. You know?
It's amazing. Creative people have these amazing big hearts and so much to say. I think it's very important. That's why I feel really lucky that I can do this show, because it's marrying tech and creative.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, giving a voice to people that are doing good in the world.
Yeah.
Or doing bad in a very good way.
Right,
depending
right,
on who
right.
you are. But do you have anything you want to say to the people that watch your show, or advice you want to give to people who say, oh, I want to do what you do? What would you tell them?
Do it.
Just do it.
I think one of the big things I've been talking about recently is, you know, people are doing things, but they're doing things with, they want subscribers and they want views. You can't start out and get subscribers and get views. You haven't earned that yet. You need to just do it. Do it for yourself. Do it because you love it. Do it for the passion of it. And then at some point, people are going to start taking notice, because that experience is going to start translating into you communicating your actual vision, you being able to turn around a project in the way that you intended to give that experience. So, I mean, the first thing first is just start doing it. And like we said before, perfect practice every time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, because I know you're really busy at NAB 2019.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. And this is...